Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today. There is no better group of ones for flower power than forms of the Shrubby Potentilla, producing single rose-like flowers continually from June to the first frost.
Hello and welcome to This Week in the Garden. I'm Peter Seabrook, here to help with some of your gardening quandaries. Today, we're joined by Catherine Dawson of Melcourt Industries, experts in composting and mulching. They recently got the nod from the Prince of Wales, so you're in very good company. My thanks to Sutton Seeds, sponsors of this podcast. Goodness, it's been a busy 10 days, two of them in Holland, and so much to see there. And really lovely weather, quite remarkable. Blue skies and more like September than November. And then, of course, back home, we were followed by really heavy rain. That brought the leaves down. Pity, really. You know, autumn colour, I think, is like a sunset. Beautiful to look at. But boy, if you're not quick, you miss it altogether. And then, of course, I've been on to Cooling's Nurseries at Knockholt, where we're arranging a poinsettia day for the 6th of December. And then there's going to be school children bussed in to sing to parties of retired folk from residential homes. It's amazing how music stimulates and pleases people with dementia. And really, when you mix the young and the old, that really works. And with a bit of luck, they'll have a nice poinsettia to travel home with. There's still lots happening in our industry. Absolutely amazing. Another Wyvale Garden Centre sold. The old Barn Garden Centre, that's changing hands. And I'm also told the latest figures from DEFRA indicate a 7% increase in area under glass. I mean, that surprised me. I thought glasshouse production, if anything, would be going down. But this is mainly fruit and vegetables. There's a 13% decline in the area used for ornamental crops. We now have the largest area cropping under glass for several decades. Tomatoes alone saw a 7-hectare increase at Thanet in Kent and 5.4 hectares in Suffolk. Boy, we're going to have a lot of tomatoes next year. The explanation for our 7% increase, although most of that increase is going towards the edible side of the industry rather than the ornamental. I mean, it's mainly fruit and veg that shows a 13% increase. And Westland, the really big company now into composts and all kinds of garden sundries, they bought Gardman recently to make them the largest wild bird food wholesaler. I hear that this week they bought Erin. That's a company which produces potting composts. I don't know whether they still do. We used to buy flower pots from them that were made of paper mache. You know, cardboard was sort of pulped up and made into containers. Very soft and easy to handle. And of course, they would be back into fashion again now. When it comes to work in the garden, in the greenhouse and polytunnel, if you're growing in the soil, it will have got very dry, especially with the heat last summer. And in my polytunnel, I've just started to really clear it and hope to dig the whole lot over, and I left the sprinkler on one area for 2 hours. I just forgot it, I regret to admit, and was really worried. But then when I started to dig, after 2 hours of sprinkling, the water had only gone in 2 or 3 inches. Now, it is important, if you've been growing crops like tomatoes and cucumbers in the greenhouse soil or in polytunnel soils, that they have a really good flooding at this time of the year. If you've been feeding high potash fertilisers through the summer, then we get what is called a build-up of salts and a really good watering to wash those through and get the soil back into more ordinary condition is well worth doing. I'm kicking myself, really, because at last mid-May, I took a few croissant cuttings in the old-fashioned way for what we called direct strut cuttings. In other words, you take the tips out of croissants that you're going to plant in the garden, you root those, grow them on in pots for a little while, and then plant them into cold greenhouses or polytunnels, and then they flower beautifully now. I've got some really fantastic blooms of a pink with green tips on the petals called Charlotte. Just wished I'd rooted more, and I've made a note that I'm certainly going to do that next year. I really need a good bed of them so I can cut 20 or 30. There's some chance, too, that once you've cut the main bloom, you know, a disbudded stem, some low side shoots will come up to give us a bit of spray flower pretty well through to Christmas with a bit of luck. Now, if you have taken plants indoors, as we suggested a week or two ago, into greenhouses and polytunnels, things like geraniums and fuchsias, do keep an eye on those. And if there is any yellowing leaves or flowers that have died and gone a bit brown, make sure you clean those off quite regularly. If they're left in place with high humidity and dull days, then soft rots, especially botrytis, can really do some damage. So keep those overwintered plants really nice and clean. Our guest this week is Catherine Dawson. We exchange comments at pretty well every trade show over the years, and I've come to respect very much Catherine's experience and knowledge of compost. Catherine, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you, Peter. I'm fine.
Yeah. Now, can you please first explain what Melcourt Industries is, you know, the company, how long you've been going and what you do?
Certainly. Melcourt was started by a chap called John Latter in the early 1980s. We've been going for just over 30 years. John was a forester and saw a gap in the market for bringing some forest residues to the, in those days, mainly the landscape market, at a time when bark mulches were in their infancy, and it coincided with landscape, with local authorities needing to make big savings on the labour costs of parks and gardens upkeep. So the growth in bark mulches in the 80s was phenomenal, and Melcourt really made a name for refining the market, making a much better choice of materials and doing them at price affordable prices. Then gradually, as they became known, there was more of a demand from the professional grower, who was also using bark in those days as an ameliorant for peat, making peat more useful by improving its structure, particularly for the nursery stock market, where plants are in pots for a long time, and any slumping of the growing medium can cause winter losses through root death. So bark was used and known by nurserymen as an ameliorant, a useful ingredient to add to their professional growing media. And then gradually, the peat debate came along and Melcourt became asked for more fine materials, fine bark, to replace peat or to replace some of it. And gradually, our expertise grew in this whole field of producing a ready-to-use growing medium rather than just an ingredient of a growing medium. And in the early 2000s, we introduced a range of professional peat-free growing media, which is still going strong to this day. And then in about 2014, we were getting more and more demands from some of our growers who were also retailers, who were saying that their customers were saying to them, we want to use what you use. So they were just selling them our professional growing media in its professional, very simple bag, And they came to us and said, "Can you do a retail pack, a more gardener friendly pack with instructions on it?" And that's how the Silvergrow range was born, through the questions and demands from our retail grower customers. And it's taken off very nicely indeed. There is a market out there for a good peat free. We decided at an early stage not to compromise on quality just because we're selling to gardeners. We're not making it down to a price, which can happen a lot in the retail market. But we decided to go for that strand of gardeners that want success, and success every time, really. So we put a professional product in a retail pack.
Can I take you right back? Because when you started with bark mulches, the quality and the standard of that recycled material was not as critical as it is with composts. And when I visited your yard, I was amazed by the uniformity of those materials that were going into potting composts. I mean, they were just so beautiful to handle and to hold, and enormous quantities of a very great, a very fine, high standard. So, I mean, how do you get that standard?
I suppose it's long years of experience. The one thing about bark compared to peat is you can handle it reasonably robustly. With peat, you have to be very careful. Every time you move peat, every time you touch it, it's subject to change. It gets finer. If a grower, you will know this, Peter, if a grower who's mixing their own puts a peat compost or a peat-based mix into a mixer and churns it around to incorporate the fertilizers and any other additives, that churning process can actually begin to break the peat down and make it finer.
And it would be the same with you when you're using a potting machine, won't it? It's not just the
yes,
mixing.
Exactly. Anything like an auger, any sort of spiral that you're putting the material through, yes. And in doing so, what happens is the growing medium can get too fine, which means it can hold too much water, which is the thing that can lead to waterlogging. A growing medium, if you think of a growing medium like a sponge, and imagine a sponge with lots of large holes, if you squeeze it in some water, a sponge with lots of large holes, lots of air capacity, will drop a lot more water out than one that's got a lot of very, very fine pores. Growing media are just the same. Lots of fine pores mean a lot more water held. Now, you do need water held, of course, but you also need a balance because plant roots need air as much as they need water. Now, with bark, we can be a bit rougher with it. You can move it without it changing. And that helps us to, we screen it, we don't chop it. I think a lot of people think that the first thing that happens when you get a bark into the processing yard is that we chop it up. Chopping is a very energy-intensive process. And we find that we can get mostly what we need by simply screening. We have very, very large screeners, and the raw bark goes in at one end, and it goes over a series. It's a big rotating drum called a trommel, with fine holes at one end, going through a series of different sizes, and we get coarse mulches out at the far end, and then going back towards the beginning, we get finer and finer. We go past the soil improver bark size fraction, and then the finest two size fractions are those that end up in growing media, much more like peat in appearance. But because it's a relatively uniform material going in, and our operators know, you know, if you put bark through a screen, if it's very dry, you can get a very different particle size range to if it's very wet. So summer to winter, they know that they can change the speeds. So our yard staff are very, very good at these fine-tuning details that you can only get through long years of experience, really. But as I say, the main thing is the advantage of the robustness of bark, which is that's the very nature of it as a material. On the tree, it's there to protect the wood underneath from the elements, and it's a strong, robust material.
Now, you speak about the different grades coming through. I mean, nurserymen, as well as using the finer grades for compost, will also top dress containers, won't they? I mean, sometimes when you go to the garden centre and you buy a conifer or a shrub or something, there'll be a layer of much coarser bark on the top.
Yes, pot mulching, as it's become known, has become very popular because so many of the herbicides that growers used to use for keeping the tops clean have been withdrawn. And also, people don't want their staff to be having to handle pesticides unless it's absolutely necessary. They need training to do that. They need to wear a lot of personal protective equipment. Whereas with a bark mulch, or you can get wood-based ones as well, you put a thin layer on the surface of a pot and it's enough to prevent particularly moss and liverwort. And moss and liverwort are a real problem for growers who might be using tunnels to grow liners in, for example, where the light levels are a little bit lower. Moss and liverwort can cope quite happily with that. They'll grow away on a wet compost surface. So if you can put a thin layer of something drier down, it's just enough to prevent it. And it adds up to a real saving. Nurserymen spend a lot of time cleaning up pots, particularly, again, nursery stock and herbaceous perennials. Anything that's been in the pot for a reasonable length of time has this propensity to get a bit weedy on the top. And putting a thin layer of a bark topper, which the most popular one from us is about a 3 millimetre to about 12 to 15 millimetres in size, the sort of material that used to get used and still does with peat as an ameliorant, as we were saying earlier, that's the right sort of size. Just sits on the top of the pot, and it helps it stay clean. It's a much quicker job for the nurseryman at dispatch, but also it saves on the amount of chemical they're having to apply. And cost-wise, it's pretty much of a muchness. Herbicides are very expensive, and again, as I say, if you can cut out the need for staff training and staff updates of training, it's all very regulated nowadays.
Catherine, am I wrong? When I buy container plants and they have that layer, I tend to just take it off and find it very useful to add to blueberry compost or even for orchid mixes, because bark is very good in those roles, isn't it?
Yep, yes, absolutely. It has got a value if there's enough on it to do that. But yes, it's the same material. It's from us. It's pine. Pine is the strongest, hardest of the softwood conifer barks that are available to us commercially. It's a nice chippy bark, and yes, we sell a lot of that into the orchid compost market, and certainly blueberries and pine bark are a very nice match. Yes,
and a very big chunky pine bark, if you use that as a decorative mulch, that really lasts, doesn't it?
It does, and It's extremely resilient, and that's why the orchid growers like it, because orchids obviously are growing in fairly warm temperatures, shouldn't be too wet most of the time, but they'll be damp, and those are conditions that organic materials can break down in. But a pine bark is very, very resilient, and we use the same material for children's play surfaces, where it's all about reducing the risk of damage if a child falls off some play equipment. And I put some in my own garden when my own children were young, and when it came to taking it out, I'd done a very thorough job with Mypex, you know, polypropylene layer underneath, and it was too big a job to uninstall it when I wanted to put it back to garden. So I've left it and just put a lot of compost and soil on the top of it. And now when I dig down, and bearing in mind my children are now in their 20s, so we're talking about 15, 16, 17 years ago, when I dig down, that pine bark is still there. It's still particulate after all these years. So, yes, it is very, very resilient.
certainly lasts.
Yeah.
Now, I have to congratulate you too, don't I? Exciting news earlier this year when you were given the Prince of Wales feathers. You know, Melcourt is now by appointment.
By appointment to His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales. We were absolutely delighted. Yes, we've sold an organic peat-free product to Prince Charles for use in his Highgrove garden, which is very close to our headquarters in Gloucestershire near Tetbury. You have to supply the royal household for a continuous period of 5 years, which we'd done. The thing we didn't realise, you also have to fill in a fairly extensive sustainability questionnaire. And it's very, very wide-ranging. The Prince of Wales has been very instrumental in upping people's game when it comes to what they do locally, socially. We had to demonstrate that we've supported local organisations with charitable donations, which is something we do. We value it. And all of this is recognised, as well as, of course, the Prince of Wales is very keen on the environment, as we all know. And so when we started supplying Highgrove, it had to be peat-free, but he's also keen on organics. And that's something that a lot of our basic raw materials are certified and approved by the Soil Association. And we do have a fully Soil Association approved organic growing medium for both retail and professional, and it was that was recognised. So yes, we were very, 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 yeah, very chuffed by that. It was a very happy day for us.
Well, I'm interested to hear the work the Prince's staff do in the background to ensure, you know, sustainability, that you're working in the community and doing other good social things. You don't just get the Prince's feathers because you've supplied for a number of years.
Yes. I say we were surprised at the depth and breadth of the investigation. It was by no means just proving what we'd sold to them. That was the start, and it went much deeper and broader, and all the more satisfying, really. And now, of course, the challenge is we must keep at it.
Now, if anyone listening wants to get your product, if they go online, you actually list where there are retailers or suppliers, don't you?
Yes, we're often asked this question because we've only been at this retail side of the market since 2014, so we're not in every garden centre by any means, but we have a where to buy tab on the website, and we try and keep it up to date, but in big letters we do have a recommendation to always ring in advance, because we can't know if somebody hasn't gone in the day before to a particular garden centre and cleared them out. So, but as far as we can, we try and keep it as live as possible, and direct people to their nearest garden centre. And indeed, we also list some online retailers as well. We don't do online retail ourselves. We like to support our stockists as best we can. But we took on a new, very experienced salesperson. Beverly Mosley joined us in the spring of this year, and she's beavering away, getting around as many garden centres as possible. And that we're finding increasing interest, that the more people buy, the more people want to buy. The reputation grows.
It takes time.
It does take time. It does. Yeah.
Catherine, it's been great speaking to you. Thanks for the time. And I look forward to meeting again fairly soon.
That's fantastic. Thank you ever so much, Peter. I'm very grateful.
I thought for my tailpiece this week, you might be interested to know that charge points for electric cars are being put into garden centres. I was interested to read that Otter Nurseries down in Devon, Pole Hill in Kent, Klondike up in Scotland and the North East, and Blue Diamond, they've already installed these electric car charging points. I mean, if the garden centre's got a nice coffee shop, then it's easy parking. You know, you just drive in, plug your car in and go and have a cup of coffee. It's quite good business, apparently. A hotel in Northampton installed 10 chargers and saw occupancy go up by 20%, and the restaurant takings increased by £3,800 a week. The numbers of electric cars are certainly increasing. There were 3,500 registered in 2013 and nearly 180,000 in 2018. And they say that by 2020, there'll be around 400,000. So we'll need some charging points. And why not pop into the garden centre, free and easy to park, nip in and have a cup of coffee, and then off you go on your way again. Thanks again to our sponsor, Sutton Seeds, and, of course, my producer, Rich Charman. And thanks to you for listening. Enjoy your gardening. We'll be back next Thursday.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.